She might as well have declared World War III for the Waite family. It didn't seem to stop Aunt Prue, though. She just laughed.
Can't put the molasses back in the jar, Lila Jane. You know it's the truth, and you know you got no right keeping it from your boy.
Aunt Prue looked me right in the eye.
I need you to come on with me. There's someone you need to meet.
My mom just looked at her. Prudence. Aunt Prue gave her the kind of look that could wilt and wither a whole flower bed.
Don't you prudence me. You can't stop this thing. And where we're going, you can't come, Lila Jane. You know well as I do that we both got nothing but the boy's best interest at heart.
It was a classic sister's face-off, the kind where before you blinked, you were already past the point where nobody came out ahead. A second later, my mom backed off. I would never know what happened in that silent exchange between them, and it was probably better that way. I'll wait for you here, Ethan. My mom looked at me. But you be careful. Aunt Prue smiled, victorious. One of the Harlan Jameses began to growl. Then we took off down the sidewalk so fast, I could barely keep up. I followed Aunt Prue and the yipping dogs to the outer limits of perpetual peace, past the Snow's perfectly restored federal-style manor house, which was situated in exactly the same spot their massive mausoleum occupied in the cemetery of the living. "Who died?" I asked, looking at my aunt, seeing as there wasn't anything on Earth powerful enough to take down Savannah Snow.
"Great-great-grandpappy Snow, for you were even halfway into diapers. Been here a long time now. Oldest plot in the row."
She picked her way down the stone path that led around back, and I followed. We headed toward an old shed behind the house, the rotted planks barely holding up the crooked roof. I could see tiny flecks of faded paint clinging to the wood where someone had scraped it clean. There was no amount of scraping that could disguise the shade that trimmed my own house in Gatlin, haint blue. The one shade of blue meant to keep the spirits away. I guess Amma was right about the haints not caring much for the color. As I looked around, I could already see the difference. There wasn't a graveyard neighbor in sight. Aunt Prue, where are we going? I've had enough of the Snows to last more than one lifetime. She glowered at me.
I told you, we're going to call on someone who knows more than me about this mess.
She reached for the splintered handle of the shed.
You just be thankful I'm a Statham, and Stathams get on with all kinds of folks, or we wouldn't have a soul to help us sort things out.
I couldn't look at my aunt. I was too scared I would start laughing, considering she got along with just about no kinds of folks, at least not in the Gatlin I was from. Yes, ma'am. She stepped inside the shed, which didn't look like anything more than an ordinary shed. But if I'd learned anything from Lena and my experiences in her world, it was that things aren't always what they seem. I followed Aunt Prue and the Harlan Jameses inside and closed the door behind us. The cracks in the wood let in just enough light for me to see her turn around in the shed. She reached for something in the dim light, and I realized it was another handle. A hidden doorwell, like the ones in the Castor tunnels. Where are we going? Aunt Prue paused, her hand still resting on the iron pull.
Not all folks are lucky enough to be buried in his garden of perpetual peace, Ethan Waite. The Castors, I reckon they got as much right to the other world as we do, don't you think?
Aunt Prue pushed the door open easily, and we stepped out onto a rocky coastline. There was a house balancing dangerously on the edge of a cliff. The weathered wood was the same sad shade of gray as the rocks, as if it had been painstakingly carved from them. It was small and simple, and hidden in plain sight, like so many things in the world I'd left behind. I watched as the waves crashed against the face of the cliff, reaching toward the house, but ultimately failing. This place had stood the test of time, defying nature in a way that seemed impossible. "Whose house is that?" I offered Aunt Prue my arm, helping her navigate the uneven ground.
"You know what they say about curiosity and cats. May not kill ya, but it'll get ya into a heap of trouble around here, too. Though trouble seems to find you even when you ain't looking for it."
She gathered her long flowered skirt in her other hand.
"You'll see soon enough."
She wouldn't say another word after that. We climbed a treacherous stairway carved into the side of the cliff. Where the rock wasn't reinforced with splintering boards, it crumbled away under my feet, and I almost lost my footing. I tried to remind myself that I wasn't about to go plummeting to my death, seeing as I was already dead. Still, it didn't help as much as you'd think it would. That was another thing I'd learned from the Castor world. There always seemed to be something worse around the next corner. There was always something to be afraid of, even if you hadn't figured out exactly what it was yet. When we reached the house, all I could think was how much it reminded me of Ravenwood Manor, though the two buildings didn't resemble each other in any way. Ravenwood was a Greek revival-style mansion, and this was a single-story clapboard. But the house seemed aware of us as we approached, alive with power and magic, like Ravenwood. It was surrounded by crooked trees with slanted branches that had been beaten into submission by the wind. It looked like the kind of twisted drawing you'd find in a book meant to terrify children into having nightmares. The kind of book where kids were trapped by more than just witches and devoured by more than wolves. I was thinking it was a good thing I no longer needed to sleep when my aunt marched up the walk. Aunt Prue didn't hesitate. She walked right up to the door and pounded the oxidized brass ring 3 times. There was writing carved around the doorframe. It was Nyadic, the ancient language of Castors. I backed up, letting all the Harlan Jameses go in front of me. They growled their tiny dog growls at the door. Before I had a chance to examine the writing more closely, the door creaked open. An old man stood in front of us. I assumed he was a Shear, but that wasn't a distinction worth making here. We were all spirits of one kind or another. His head was shaved and scarred, faint lines overlapping in a vicious pattern. His white beard was cut short, his eyes covered by dark wraparound glasses. A black sweater hung from his skinny frame, which was partially hidden behind the door. There was something frail and worn out about him, like he had escaped from a work camp, or worse.
"Prudence," he nodded. "Is this the boy?"
"Course it is," Aunt Prue shoved me forward. "Ethan, this here is Obadiah's Trueblood. Go on in."
I extended my hand. "It's nice to meet you, sir." Obadiah held up his right hand, which had been hidden behind the door.
"I'm sure you'll understand if we don't shake."
His hand was severed at the wrist, a black line marking the place where it had been cut. Above the mark, his wrist was severely scarred, as if it had been punctured over and over again. Which it had. 5 writhing black snakes extended from his wrist to the point where his fingers would normally have reached. They were hissing and striking at the air, curling around one another.
"Don't worry," Obadiah said. "They won't hurt you. It's me they enjoy tormenting."
I couldn't think of anything to say. I wanted to run. The Harlan Jameses growled even more loudly, and the snakes hissed back. Aunt Prue scowled at all of them.
"Please, not you two."
I stared at the snake hand. Something about it was familiar. How many guys with snakes for fingers could there be? Why did I feel like I knew him? It hit me, and I realized who Obadiah was. The guy Macon had sent Link to see in the tunnels. Last summer, right after the 17th moon. The guy who died right in front of Link after Hunting bit him. In his house. This house. At least the otherworld version of it. Back then, I thought Link was exaggerating. But he wasn't. Not even Link could have made this up. The snake that replaced Obadiah's thumb wrapped itself around his wrist, stretching its head toward me. Its tongue flicked in and out, the little fork flying. Aunt Prue pushed me across the threshold, and I went stumbling, only inches from the snakes.
"Go on in. You aren't afraid of a few itty-bitty little garden snakes, are you?"
Was she kidding? They looked like pit vipers. I turned awkwardly toward Obadiah. "I'm sorry, sir. They just caught me off guard."
"Don't give it another thought."
He waved off the apology with a twist of the wrist on his good hand.
"It's not something you see every day."
Aunt Prue sniffed.
"I've seen a stranger thing or two."
I stared at my aunt, who looked as smug as if she shook a new snake hand every day of her life. Obadiah closed the door behind us, but not before checking the horizon in every direction.
"You came alone? You weren't followed?"
Aunt Prue shook her head.
"Me? Nobody can follow me."
She wasn't kidding. I looked back to Obadiah. "Can I ask you something, sir?" I had to know for sure if he'd met Link, if he was the same guy.
"Of course."
I cleared my throat. "I think you met a friend of mine. When you were alive, I mean. He told me about someone who looked like you." Obadiah held out his hand.
"You mean a man with five snakes for a hand? There probably aren't many of us."
I wasn't sure how to say the next part. "If it was my friend, he was there when you, you know, died. I'm not sure it matters, but if it does, I'd like to know." Aunt Prue looked at me, confused. She didn't know any of this. Link had never told anyone but me, as far as I knew. Obadiah was watching me, too.
"Did this friend of yours happen to know Macon Ravenwood?"
I nodded. "He did, sir."
"Then I remember him well," he smiled. "I saw him deliver my message to Macon after I passed. You can see a great deal from this side."
"I guess so." He was right. Because we were dead, we could see everything. And because we were dead, it didn't matter what we could see. So the whole seeing things from the grave concept, majorly overrated. All you ended up seeing was more than you wanted to in the first place. I'm pretty sure I wasn't the first guy who would have traded seeing a little less for living a little more. I didn't say that to Edward Snakehands, though. I didn't want to think about how much I had in common with a guy whose fingers had fangs.
"Why don't we make ourselves more comfortable? We have a lot to talk about."
Obadiah ushered us further into the living room, really the only room I could see, except for a small kitchen and a lone door at the end of the hall, which must have led to the bedroom. It was basically one gigantic library. Shelves extended from the floor to the ceiling, a battered brass library ladder attached to the highest shelf. A polished wooden stand held a huge leather volume, like the dictionary we had in the Gatlin County Library. Marion would have loved this place. There was nothing else in the room aside from four threadbare armchairs. Obadiah waited for Aunt Prue and me to sit down before he chose a chair opposite ours. He removed the dark glasses he was wearing, and his eyes locked on mine. I should have known. Yellow eyes. He was a dark caster, of course. That made sense if he really was the guy from Link's story. But still, now that I thought about it, what was Aunt Prue doing taking me to see a dark caster? Obadiah must have realized what I was thinking.
"You didn't think there were dark casters here, did you?"
I shook my head. "No, sir. I guess I didn't." Surprise! Obadiah smiled grimly. Aunt Prue swooped in to save me. The other world's a place for unfinished business, for folks like me and you and Obadiah's here, who aren't ready to move on just yet. And my mom? She nodded. Lila Jane more than anyone. She's been kicking around here longer than the whole lot of us.
Some can cross freely between this world and others, Obadiah explained. We all eventually get to our destination. But those of us whose lives were cut short before we could right the wrongs haunting us, we remain here until we find that moment of peace.
He didn't have to tell me. I already knew it for myself. Crossing was complicated business, and I hadn't felt anything remotely peaceful. Not yet. I turned to Aunt Prue. So you're stuck here too? I mean, when you aren't crossing back to visit the sisters. Because of me?
I can leave if I set my mind to it.
She patted my hand as if to remind me I was silly to think there was ever anyone or anything that could keep my aunt from a place she wanted to go.
But I'm not going anywhere till you're back home where you belong. You're a part of my unfinished business now, Ethan, and I accept that. I mean to make things right.
She patted my cheek.
Besides, what else am I gonna do? I got myself mercy and grace to wait for, don't I?
Back home. You mean to Gatlin?
To Miss Alma and Lena and all our kin, she answered.
Aunt Prue, I could barely cross to visit Gatlin, and even then, nobody could see me.
That's where you're wrong, boy.
Obadiah spoke up, and one of his angry-looking snakes sank its fangs into his wrist. He winced, pulling a piece of black material shaped like a mitten out of his pocket. He dropped the hood over the hissing snakes, using two pieces of cord at the bottom to tighten it. The snakes shifted and thrashed beneath the fabric.
Now, where was I?
Are you okay? I was a little distracted. It's not every day that a guy, or even a sheer, gets bitten by his own hand. At least, I hoped it wasn't. But Obadiah didn't want to talk about himself.
When I heard about the circumstances that brought you to this side of the veil, I sent word to your aunt immediately. Your aunt and your mother.
My Aunt Prue clicked her tongue impatiently. That explained my aunt wanting to bring me here, and my mother not wanting her to. Just because you told any two people in my family the same piece of news, that didn't mean they'd agree about what they'd heard. My mom used to say the people in the Evers family were about the most hog-minded, mule-stuck bloodline you could find, and the Waits were worse. A pack of wasps fighting over the nest, that's what my dad called the Wait family reunions. How did you hear about what happened? I tried not to stare at the snakes twisting beneath the black hood.
News travels fast in the other world, he said, hesitating. More importantly, I knew it was a mistake.
I told you, Ethan Waite, Aunt Prue looked mighty satisfied.
If it was a mistake, if I wasn't supposed to be here, maybe there was a way to fix it. Maybe I really could go home. I wanted so badly for it to be true, the same way I had wanted this to be a dream I could wake up from. But I knew better. Nothing was ever how you wanted it to be. Not anymore. Not for me. They just didn't understand. It wasn't a mistake. I chose to come, Mr. Trueblood. I worked it out with the Lilim. If I didn't, the people I loved and lots of others were going to die. Obadiah nodded.
I know all of that, Ethan, just like I know about the Lilim and the order of things. I'm not questioning what you did. What I'm saying is that you never should have had to make that choice.
It wasn't in the Chronicles. The Castor Chronicles? I had only seen the book once in the archive when the Council of the Far Keep came to question Marion, yet it was the second time I'd heard the subject come up since I got here. How did Obadiah know about it? And whatever any of it meant, my mom hadn't exactly wanted to elaborate.
Yes, Obadiah nodded.
I don't understand what that has to do with me. He was silent for a moment.
Go on, tell him.
Aunt Prue was giving Obadiah Trueblood the same forceful look she always gave me right before she made me do something crazy, like bury acorns in her yard for baby squirrels.
He deserves to know. Set it right.
Obadiah nodded at Aunt Prue and looked back at me with those golden yellow eyes that made my skin crawl almost as much as his snake hand did.
As you know, the Castor Chronicles is a record of everything that has happened in the world. But it is also a record of what might be, possible futures that have not come to pass.
The past, the present, and the future, I remember. The three weird-looking keepers I saw in the library and during Marion's trial. How could I forget?
Yes, in the Far Keep, those futures can be altered, transforming them from possible futures to actual ones.
Are you saying the book can change the future? I was stunned. Marion had never mentioned any of this.
It can, Obadiah answered, if a page is altered or one is added. A page that was never intended to be there.
A shiver moved up my back. What are you saying, Mr. Trueblood?
The page that tells the story of your death was never part of the original Chronicles. It was added.
He looked up at me, haunted. Why would someone do that?
There are more reasons for people's actions than the number of actions that are actually set in motion.
His voice was distant, full of regret and sorrow. I would never have expected from a dark caster.
The important thing is that your fate, this fate, can be changed.
Changed. Could you save a life once it was over? I was terrified to ask the next question, to believe there was a way I could get back to everything I lost, to Gatlin, to Amma. Lena. All I wanted was to feel her in my arms and hear her voice in my head. I wanted to find a way back to the Castor girl I loved more than anything in this world, or any world. How? The answer didn't actually matter. I would do whatever I had to, and Obadiah Trueblood knew it.
It's dangerous. Obadiah's expression was a warning. More dangerous than anything in the mortal world.
I heard the words, but I couldn't believe them. There was nothing more terrifying than staying here. What do I have to do?
You'll have to destroy your own page in the Castor Chronicles, the one that describes your death.
I had 1,000 questions, but only one mattered. What if you're wrong, and my page was there all along? Obadiah stared down at what was left of his hand, the snakes rearing and striking even under the cloth. A shadow passed across his face. He raised his eyes to meet mine.
I know it wasn't there, Ethan, because I'm the one who wrote it.
Chapter 11. Darker Things. The room went quiet, so quiet you could hear the house creak as the wind pushed against it, so quiet you could hear the snakes hiss almost as loudly as Aunt Prue's asthma and my pounding heart. Even the Harlan Jameses slunk away, whimpering behind a chair. For a second, I couldn't think. My mind was completely blank. There was no way to process this, to understand why a man I had never met would change the course of my life so irreparably and violently. What the hell did I do to this guy? I finally found the words, at least some of them. There were others I couldn't say in front of Aunt Prue, or she'd wash my mouth out with more than soap and probably make me suck down a bottle of Tabasco, too. Why? You don't even know me.
It's complicated.
Complicated? My voice started rising, and I pulled myself up out of my chair. You ruined my life. You forced me to choose between saving the people I loved and sacrificing myself. I hurt everyone I care about. They had to put a cast on my own father to keep him from going crazy.
I'm sorry, Ethan. I wouldn't have wished this on my worst enemy.
No, you just wished it on some 17-year-old kid you'd never met. This guy wasn't going to help me. He was the reason I was stuck in this nightmare in the first place. Aunt Prue reached out and took my hand.
I know you're angry, and you've got more right than anyone to be. But Obadiah can help us get you back home. So you need to sit down here and listen to what he's got to say.
How do you know we can trust him, Aunt Prue? Every word that comes out of his mouth is probably a lie. I pulled my hand away.
You listen here, and you listen good.
She yanked on my arm harder than I would have expected, and I sank back down into the chair next to her. She wanted me to look her in the eye.
I've known Obadiah Trueblood since before he was light or dark, before he'd done wrong or right. Spent the better part of my days walking the Castor tunnels with the Truebloods and my daddy.
Aunt Prue paused and glanced at Obadiah.
And he saved me a time or two down there, even if he wasn't smart enough to save himself.
I didn't know what to think. Maybe my aunt had charted the tunnels with Obadiah. Maybe she could trust him. But that didn't mean I could. Obadiah seemed to know what I was thinking.
Ethan, you may find this hard to believe, but I know what it's like to feel helpless, to be at the mercy of decisions that you didn't make.
You have no idea how I feel. I heard the anger in my voice, but I didn't try to hide it. I wanted Obadiah Trueblood to know I hated him for what he'd done to me and the people I loved. I thought about Lena leaving the button on my grave. He didn't know what that felt like, for me or Lena.
Ethan, I know you don't trust him, and I don't blame you.
Aunt Prue was playing hardball now. This meant something to her.
But I'm asking you to trust me and hear him out.
I locked eyes with Obadiah. Start talking. How do I get back? Obadiah took a long breath.
As I said, the only way to get your life back is to erase your death.
So if I destroy the page, I go home, right? I wanted to be sure there were no loopholes. No calling a moon out of time, no splitting the moon in half, no curses that kept me from leaving once the page was gone. He nodded.
Yes, but first you have to get to the book.
You mean from the Far Keep? The Keepers had it with them when they came from my Aunt Marion.
That's right.
He looked at me, startled. I guess he hadn't expected me to know anything about the Castor Chronicles. So what are we doing sitting around here talking? Let's get on with it. I was halfway out of my chair before I realized Obadiah wasn't moving.
And you think you'll just walk in there and take the page?
He asked.
It's not that easy.
Who's going to stop me? A bunch of keepers? What do I have to lose? I tried not to think about how terrifying they had seemed when they came for Marion. Obadiah pulled the hood off his hand, and the snakes hissed and struck one another.
Do you know who did this to me?
A bunch of keepers who caught me trying to steal my page from the Chronicles.
Lord have mercy, Aunt Prue said, fanning herself with her handkerchief. For a second, I didn't know if I believed him, but I recognized the emotion playing out on his face because I was feeling it myself. Fear. Keepers did that to you. He nodded.
Angelus and Adriel, on one of their more generous days.
I wondered if Adriel was the big one who had shown up in the archive with Angelus and the albino woman. They were the three strangest-looking people I'd seen in the Castor world. At least, until today. I looked at Obadiah and his snakes. Like I said, what can they do to me now? I'm already dead. I tried to smile, even though it wasn't funny. It was the opposite of funny. Obadiah held out his hand, the snakes jerking and stretching as they tried to reach me.
There are things worse than death, Ethan. Things that are darker than the dark casters. I should know. If you are caught, the keepers will never let you leave the library at the Far Keep. You will be their scribe and their slave, forced to rewrite the futures of innocent casters and mortal waywards who are bound to them.
Waywards are supposed to be pretty rare. How many can there be to write about? I had never met another one, and I'd met vexes and incubuses and more kinds of casters than I ever wanted to. Obadiah leaned forward in his chair, cloaking his cruelly deformed hand once again.
Perhaps they aren't as rare as you think. Maybe they just don't live long enough for the casters to find them.
There was an undeniable truth in his words that I couldn't explain. I guess there was some part of me that knew a lie would have sounded different. Another part knew I'd always been in danger one way or another, with or without Lena, whether I was meant to jump off a water tower or not. Either way, the fear in his voice should have been proof enough. Okay, so I won't get caught. Aunt Prue's face was filled with concern.
Maybe this isn't the best idea. We should go on back to my house and think on it. Talk to your mama about it. She's waiting on us, I reckon.
I squeezed her hand. Don't worry, Aunt Prue. I know a way in. There's a temporis porta in an old tunnel beneath Waite's Landing. I can get in and out before the keepers ever realize I was there. If I could walk through walls in the mortal realm, I was pretty sure I could step through the temporis porta, too. Obadiah broke the end off a thick cigar. His hand was shaking as he lit the match and held it up. He took a few puffs until it glowed a steady orange.
You can't enter the library at the Far Keep through the mortal realm. You have to enter through the seam.
He delivered the news as calmly as if he was giving me directions to the local Stop and Steal to pick up some milk. You mean the Great Barrier? It seemed like a strange place for a door to the Far Keep's inner sanctum. I can handle it. I did it once, and I can do it again.
What you've done is nothing compared to what you're about to do. The Great Barrier is just one place you can get to from the seam,
Obadiah explained.
You can cross into other worlds from there. That will make the barrier feel like home.
Just tell me how to get there. We were wasting time, and every second we sat around talking was another second away from Lena.
You have to cross the Great River. It runs through the Great Barrier all the way to the seam. It forms the border between the realms.
Like the River Styx? He ignored me.
And you can't cross unless you have the river eyes, two smooth black stones.
Are you kidding? He shook his head.
Not at all. They're very rare and hard to come by.
River eyes, got it. I can find a couple rocks.
If you get across the river, and that's a big if, you'll still have to make it past the gatekeeper before you can get into the library.
How do I do that? Obadiah took a puff from the cigar.
You have to offer him something he can't refuse.
What exactly would that be?
Aunt Prue asked, as though she might have whatever it was tucked in her pocketbook. Like the gatekeeper would be interested in 3 linty breath mints, some non-dairy creamer, and a wad of folded-up Kleenex.
It's always different. You'll have to figure it out when you get there, Obadiah said. He has eclectic taste.
He didn't say any more on the subject. And offering eclectic taste, whatever the hell that meant. Okay, so I have to find the black stones and get across the Great River, I said. Figure out what the gatekeeper guy wants and give it to him to get inside the library. Then find the Castor Chronicles and destroy my page. I paused because the question I was about to ask was the most important detail, and I wanted to get it straight. If I do all that and don't get caught, I'll get back home, my real home. How do I do that? What happens after I destroy the page? Obadiah looked at Aunt Prue and back to me.
I'm not sure. It's never happened, as far as I know.
He shook his head.
It's a chance, nothing more. Not even a good one.
Nothing certain, Ethan Waite, except for that you had a shot at a life of your own, and the keepers stole it from you.
I stood up before they could finish talking. Lena was waiting, in my room or hers, by the crooked cross stuck in the grass at my gravesite or somewhere else. But she was waiting. That's what mattered. If I had a chance in hell to get back home, I'd take it.
I'm trying, El. Don't give up on me.
I need to get going, Mr. Trueblood. I have a river to cross. Aunt Prue opened her pocketbook and pulled out a faded map, covered with shapes that didn't represent any continent, country, or state I'd ever seen. This was more than a doodle on the back of an old church program. I knew what Aunt Prue's maps were like, and I knew how important they had been to me before. The last time I found my way to the seam for Lena's 17th moon.
I've been working on it since I got here, just a little bit here and there. Obadiah told me you'd be needing it.
She shrugged.
Reckoned it was the least I could do.
I leaned down and hugged her.
Thanks, Aunt Prue, and don't be worried. I'm not, she lied.
But she didn't need to be. I was worried enough for both of us. Chapter 12. Still Here. After we got back to our side of the other world, Harlan James's and all, I didn't go home. I left Aunt Prue at her house and walked the streets, more like the rose of his garden of perpetual peace. Peace wasn't exactly what I was feeling. I stopped in front of Waite's Landing. It looked every bit the same as when I left, and I knew my mom was inside. I wanted to talk to her, but there were other things I had to do first. I sat down on the front steps, closing my eyes.
Carry me home. What was it? To remember and be remembered. Ducite me domum. Ut meminisem. Ut in memoria tenear. I remember Lena, not the water tower. What came before? I remember Ravenwood. Let Ravenwood remember me. Let Ravenwood carry me.
I was lying in the dirt in front of Ravenwood, half stuck beneath a rose bush and an overgrown camellia hedge. I had crossed again, and this time, all on my own. I'll be damned, I laughed, relieved. I was getting pretty good at this whole being dead thing. Then I practically ran up the old veranda steps. I had to see if Lena had gotten the message, my message. My only problem was that no one bothered to do the crossword in the Stars and Stripes, not even Amma. I had to find a way to get them to look at that paper, if they hadn't already. Lena wasn't in her room, and she wasn't at my grave either. She wasn't in any of the usual places we used to go. Not in the Lemon Grove or the crypt, where I died the first time. I even looked in Ridley's old room, where Liv was asleep in Ridley's creaking four-poster bed. I was hoping she'd be able to sense that I was there with her Ethan weightometer. No such luck. That's when I realized it was nighttime in Gatlin, the real Gatlin, and there was absolutely no correlation between time that passed in the other world and mortal time. I felt like I'd only been gone a few hours, and here it was, the middle of the night. I didn't even know what day it was, come to think of it. Worse yet, when I leaned over Liv's face in the moonlight, it looked like she had been crying. I felt guilty, since there was a strong possibility I was the reason for the tears, unless she and John had had a fight. But that was unlikely, because when I looked down, I was standing right in the middle of John Breed's chest. He was curled up next to the bed, on the worn pink shag carpeting. Poor guy. As many times as he had screwed up in the past, he was good to live, and for a while he believed he was the one who is too. It's hard to hold a grudge against a guy who tried to give his life to save the world. If anyone understood that, it was me. It wasn't his fault the world wouldn't have him. So I stepped off his chest as quickly as I could and vowed to be a little more careful where I put my feet in the future. Not that he'd ever know. As I moved through the rest of the house, it seemed completely vacant. Then I heard the crackling of a fireplace and followed the sound. At the bottom of the stairs, straight off the front hall, I found Macon, sitting in his cracked leather chair by the fire. True to form, where there was Macon, there was also Lena. She was sitting at his feet, leaning against the ottoman. I could smell the Sharpie she was writing with. Her notebook lay open on her lap, but she was barely looking at it, drawing circles over and over until the page looked like it was ripping apart. She wasn't crying, far from it. She was plotting. It was Ethan. It had to be. I could feel him there with us, like he was standing right next to his grave. Had she seen the crossword? Maybe that was why she was so fired up. I looked around the study, but if she'd read the paper, there was no sign of it. A stack of old newspapers filled a brass bin next to the fireplace. Macon used them for kindling. I tried to lift a single page of newsprint, and I could barely make a corner flutter. I wondered if I would have been able to figure out the crossword without a more experienced shear like my mom helping me. Amma didn't need to worry so much about the haint blue and the salt and the charms. This whole haunting thing wasn't as easy as it was cracked up to be. Then I noticed how sad Macon looked, studying Lena's face. I gave up on the newspaper and focused harder on their conversation.
You may have felt the essence of him, Lena. A burial site is a powerful place, no doubt.
I don't mean I felt something, Uncle Macon. I felt him, Ethan, the Sheer. I'm sure of it. The smoke from the fire curled out from the grating. Boo lay with his head in Lena's lap, the flames reflecting in his dark eyes.
Because a button fell onto his grave.
Macon's voice didn't change, but he sounded tired. I wondered how many of these conversations he'd endured since I died. No, because he moved it. Lena didn't give up.
What about the wind? What about someone else? Wesley could have bumped it off, considering he is not the most graceful of creatures.
It was only a week ago. I remember it perfectly. I know it happened. She was even more stubborn than he was. A week ago? Had that much time passed in Gatlin? Lena hadn't seen the paper. She couldn't prove I was still here, not to herself or my family or even my best friend. There was no way to explain about Obadiah's true blood and all the complications in my life, not while she didn't even know I was in the room with her.
What about since then? Macon asked.
She looked troubled. Maybe he's gone. Maybe he's up to something. I don't know how it works in the other world. Lena stared into the fire as if she was looking for something. It's not just me. I went to see Amma. She said she felt him in the house.
Amma's feelings are not to be trusted when it comes to Ethan.
What's that supposed to mean? Of course Amma can be trusted. She's the most trustworthy person I know. Lena looked furious, and I wondered how much she actually knew about that night at the water tower. He didn't say a word. Isn't she?
Macon closed his book. I can't see the future. I'm not a seer. All I know is Ethan did what needed to be done. The whole realm, dark and light, will always be grateful to him.
Lena stood up, ripping the ink-stained page from her notebook. Well, I'm not. I understand he was very brave and noble and whatever, but he left me here, and I'm not sure it was worth it. I don't care about the universe and the realm and saving the world. Not anymore. Not without Ethan.
She tossed the ripped page into the fire. The orange flames leaped up around it. Uncle Macon spoke as he watched the fire. I understand.
Really?
Lena didn't seem to believe him. There was a time when I put my heart above all else.
And what happened?
I don't know. I got older, I suppose, and I learned that things often are more complicated than we think. Leaning against the mantel, Lena stared into the fire.
Maybe you just forgot what it feels like.
Perhaps.
I won't, she looked at her uncle. I won't ever forget.
She twisted her hand, and the smoke rose up until it curled around her and took shape. It was a face. It was my face. Lena. My face disappeared at the sound of Macon's voice, fading away into streaks of gray cloud.
Leave me alone. Let me have what little I can, what I have left of him.
She sounded fierce, and I loved her for it. Those are only memories. There was sadness in Macon's voice. You have to move on. Trust me.
Why? You never did.
He smiled sadly, staring past her into the fire. That's how I know.
I followed Lena up the stairs. Though the ice and snow had melted away since my last visit to Ravenwood, a thick gray fog hung throughout the house, and the air was colder. Lena didn't seem to notice or care what was going on around her, even though her breath was curling up toward her face in a quiet white cloud. I noticed the dark rings under her eyes, the way she looked as thin and as frail as she had when Macon died. She wasn't the same person she had been then, though. She was someone much stronger. She had believed Macon was gone forever, and we found a way to bring him back. I knew deep down she couldn't hold out for any less of a fate for me. Maybe Lena didn't know I was here, but she knew I wasn't gone. She wasn't giving up on me yet. She couldn't. I knew, because if I was the one left behind, I couldn't have either. Lena slipped into her room, past the pile of suitcases, and crawled into bed without even taking off her clothes. She waved her fingers, and her door slammed shut. I lay down next to her, my face on the edge of her pillow. We were only inches apart. The tears began to roll down her face, and I thought my heart would break, just watching her. I love you, Elle. I always will. I closed my eyes and reached for her. I wished desperately that there was something I could do.
There had to be some way I could let her know I was still here.
I love you, Ethan. I won't forget you. I'll never forget you. And I'll never stop loving you.
I heard her voice uncurl inside my head. When I opened my eyes, she was staring right through me.
Never, she whispered.
Never, I said. I wrapped my fingers in the curls of black hair and waited until she fell asleep. I could feel her nestled up next to me. I had to make sure she found that newspaper. As I followed Lena down the stairs the next morning, I was starting to feel A, like some kind of stalker, and B, like I was losing my mind. Kitchen sent out as big a breakfast as ever, but thankfully now that the order wasn't broken and the world wasn't about to end, the food wasn't so raw that the sight of it made you want to throw up. Macon was waiting for Lena at the table, and he was already digging in. I still wasn't used to the sight of him eating. There were biscuits this morning, baked with so much butter it came bubbling up through cracks in the dough. Thick slices of bacon crowded against an ama-sized mountain of scrambled eggs. Berries piled inside a big piece of pastry crust that Link, before his Linkubus days, would have swallowed whole in one bite. Then I saw it. The Stars and Stripes was folded at the bottom of a whole stack of newspapers, from about as many countries as I could name. I reached for the paper just as Macon reached for the coffee pot, shoving his hand right through my chest. It felt cold and strange, like I'd swallowed a piece of ice. Maybe like brain freeze from an icy, only in my heart rather than in my head. I grabbed the paper with both hands and pulled on it as hard as I could. One edge slowly peeked out from beneath the pile. Not good enough. I looked up at Macon and Lena. Macon had his head buried in a newspaper called L'Express, which looked like it was written in French. Lena had her eyes glued to her plate, like the eggs were going to reveal an important truth.
Come on, Elle. It's right here. I'm right here.
I yanked the paper harder, and it slid all the way out from the pile and fluttered onto the floor. Neither one of them looked up. Lena stirred milk into her tea. I reached for her hand with mine, squeezing it until she dropped the spoon, splashing tea onto the tablecloth. Lena stared at her teacup, flexing her fingers. She leaned down to blot the tablecloth with her napkin. Then she noticed the paper on the floor, where it had landed next to her foot. What's this? She picked up the Stars and Stripes. I didn't know you subscribed to this paper, Uncle Em.
I do. I find it's helpful to know what's going on in town. You wouldn't want to miss, I don't know, the latest diabolical plan of Mrs. Lincoln and the Ladies' Auxiliary.
He smiled.
Where would the fun be in that?
I held my breath. She tossed it over, face down on the table. The crossword was on the back, the Sunday edition, just like I'd planned it back in the office of the Stars and Stripes. She smiled to herself.
Amma would do this crossword in about 5 minutes.
Macon looked up.
Less than that, I'm sure. I believe I could do it in 3.
Really?
Try me.
11 across, she said. Apparition or phantasm, a spectral being, a spirit from another world, a ghost. Macon looked at her, his eyes narrowing. Lena leaned over the paper, holding her tea. I watched as she began to read.
Figure it out, Elle. Please.
It was only when the teacup began to shake and fell to the carpet that I knew she'd gotten it. Not the crossword, but the message behind it.
Ethan?
She looked up. I leaned closer, holding my cheek against hers. I knew she couldn't feel it. I wasn't back with her, not yet. But I knew she believed I was there, and for now, that's all that mattered. Macon stared at her, surprised. The chandelier above the table began to sway. The room brightened until it was blindingly white. The enormous dining room windows began to crack into hundreds of glass spiderwebs. Heavy drapes flew against the walls like feathers in the wind.
Darling, Macon began. Lena's hair curled in every direction. I closed my eyes as window after window began to shatter like fireworks.
Ethan? I'm here.
Above everything, that was all I needed her to know.
Finally.
Chapter 13. Where the Crow Carries You. Lena knew I was there. It was hard to drag myself away, but she had figured out the truth. That was the main thing. Amma and Lena. I was two for two. It was a start. And I was exhausted. Now I had to find my way back to her for good. I crossed back in about 10 seconds flat, if only the rest of the way was that easy. I knew I should go home and tell my mom everything, but I also knew how worried she'd be about me going to the Far Keep. From what Genevieve and my mom and Aunt Prue and Obadiah's Trueblood had said, the Far Keep seemed like the last place a person would voluntarily go, especially a person with a mother. I cataloged everything I needed to do, everywhere I needed to go. The river, the book, the river eyes, two smooth black stones. That's what Obadiah's Trueblood said I needed. My mind kept going back to it over and over. How many smooth black stones could there be in the world? And how was I going to know which ones happened to be the eyes of the river? Whatever that even meant. Maybe I'd find them on the way. Or maybe I'd already found them, and I didn't even know it. A magical black rock, the eye of the river. It sounded strangely familiar. Had I heard it before? I thought back to Amma, to all the charms, every tiny bone, every bit of graveyard dirt and salt, every piece of string she'd given me to wear. Then I remembered. It wasn't one of Amma's charms. It was from the vision I saw when I opened the bottle in her room. I had seen the stone hanging around Sulla's neck, Sulla the prophet. In the vision, Amma had called it the Eye, the river's Eye, which meant I knew where to find it and how to get there, as long as I could figure out how to find my way to Waiter's Creek on this side. It couldn't be avoided, intimidating as it was. It was time to pay a visit to the greats. I unfolded Aunt Prue's map. Now that I knew how to read the map, it wasn't that hard to see where the doorwells were marked. I found the red X on the doorwell that led to Obadiah's place, the one at the Snow family crypt. So after that, I went looking for every red mark I could find. There were plenty of red X's. But which of those doorwells would take me to Waiter's Creek? Their destinations weren't exactly marked like exits on the interstate, and I didn't want to stumble into any of the surprises that could be waiting for a guy behind Otherworld Door Number 3. Snakes for fingers might be getting off easy. There had to be some kind of logic. I didn't know what connected the doorwell behind the Snow family plot to the rocky path that had taken me to Obadiah's Trueblood, but there had to be something. Seeing as we were all related to one another around here, that something was probably blood. What would connect one of these plots in his garden of perpetual peace to the greats? If there was a liquor store in the graveyard, or a buried coffin full of Uncle Abner's wild turkey, or the ruins of a haunted bakery known for lemon meringue pie, he wouldn't have been far behind me. But Waiter's Creek had its own graveyard. There wasn't a crypt or a plot for Ivy, Abner, Sulla, or Delilah in perpetual peace. Then I found a red X behind what my mom had said was one of the oldest tribute markers in the graveyard, and I knew it had to be the one. So I folded up the map and decided to check it out. Minutes later, I found myself staring at a white marble obelisk. Sure enough, the word sacred was carved into the crumbling veined stone, right above a gloomy-looking skull with empty eyes that stared at you straight on. I never understood why a single creepy skull marked a handful of Gatlin's oldest graves. But we all knew about this particular tribute, even though it was tucked away on the far edge of perpetual peace, where the heart of the old graveyard sat, long before the new one was built up around it. The Confederate Needle, that's what folks around Gatlin called it, not because of its pointed shape, but because of the ladies who had put it there. Catherine Cooper Sewell, who founded the Gatlin chapter of the Daughters of the American Revolution, probably not long after the revolution itself, had seen to it that the DAR raised enough money for the obelisk before she died. She had married Samuel Sewell. Samuel Sewell had built and run the Palmetto Brewery, the first distillery in Gatlin County. Palmetto Brewery made one thing and one thing only. Wild turkey. Pretty smart, I said, circling to the back of the obelisk where the twisted wrought iron fencing bowed and broke into pieces. I didn't know if I would have been able to see it back home, but here in the other world, the trapdoor of a doorwell cut into the base of the rock was plain as day. The rectangular outline of the entrance snaked between rows of engraved shells and angels. I pressed my hand against the soft stone and felt it give way beneath me, swinging from sunlight into shadow. A dozen uneven stone steps later, I found myself on what sounded like a gravel pathway. I made my way around a turn in the passage and caught sight of light pooling in the distance. As I got closer, I smelled swamp grass and waterlogged palmettos. There was no mistaking that smell. This was the right place. I reached a warped wooden door, propped halfway open. Nothing could keep out the light now, or the hot, sticky air, which only got hotter and stickier as I climbed the steps on the other side of the door. Waiter's Creek was waiting for me. I couldn't see past the first fringe of tall cypress trees, but I knew it was there. If I followed the muddy path in front of me, I would find my way to Amma's home away from home. I pushed through the palmetto branches and saw a row of tiny houses just off the edge of the water. The grates. It had to be. As I made my way down the path, I heard voices. On the nearest veranda, three women were crowded around a table with a deck of cards. They were fussing and swatting at one another the way the sisters did when they played Scrabble. I recognized Twyla from a distance. I suspected she was going to join the greats when she died on the night of the 17th moon. Still, it was strange to see her here, hanging out on the porch and playing cards with them.
Now, you can't throw that card, Twyla, and you know it. You think I can't see you cheating?
A woman in a colorful shawl pushed the card back toward Twyla.
Now, Sala, you may be a seer, Cher, but there's nothing there to see,
Twyla responded. Sulla, that's who she was. Now I recognized her from the vision, Sulla the prophet, Amma's most famous ancestor of all.
Well, I think you're both cheating.
The third woman tossed her cards down and adjusted her round glasses. Her shawl was bright yellow.
And I don't want to play with either one of you.
I tried not to laugh, but the scene was too familiar. I might as well be home.
Don't you be such a sourpuss, Delilah,
Sulla wagged her head. Delilah, she was the one in the glasses. A fourth woman was sitting in a rocking chair at the edge of the porch, with a hoop in one hand and a needle in the other.
Why don't you go on in and cut your old Aunt Ivy a slice of pie? I'm busy with my stitching.
Ivy. It was weird to finally see her in person after the visions.
Pie? Ha!
An old man laughed from his rocking chair, a bottle of wild turkey in one hand and a pipe in the other. Uncle Abner. I felt like I knew the man personally, though we'd never met. After all, I'd been in the kitchen when Amma made him more than 100 pies over the years, maybe 1,000. The giant crow flew down and landed on Uncle Abner's shoulder.
Won't find any pie in there, Delilah. We're running low.
Delilah stopped, one hand on the screen door.
Why would we be running low, Abner?
He nodded in my direction.
I'm guessing Amory's busy baking for him now.
He emptied his pipe, tapping the old tobacco over the side of the porch railing. Who, me? I couldn't believe Uncle Abner was actually talking to me. I took a step closer to all of them. I mean, hello, sir. He ignored me.
I'm guessing I won't be seeing another lemon meringue unless it's the boy's favorite, too.
Are you gonna stand there staring, or come on over here already?
Sulla had her back to me, but she still knew I was there. Twyla squinted into the sunlight.
Ethan, that you share?
I walked toward the house, as much as I felt like staying where I was. I don't know why I was so nervous. I hadn't expected the Greats to seem so regular. They could have been any group of old folks hanging out on the porch on a sunny afternoon. Except that they were all dead. Yeah, I mean, yes, ma'am, it's me. Uncle Abner stood up and walked over to the railing to get a better look. The enormous crow was still perched on his shoulder. It flapped its wings, and he didn't even flinch.
Like I said, we won't be getting any pie or much else now that the boy's up here with us.
Twyla waved me over.
Maybe he'll share a bit of his with you.
I climbed up the scuffed wooden steps, and the wind chimes tapped against one another. There wasn't so much as a breeze.
He's a spirit, all right,
Sulla said. There was a tiny brown bird hopping around the table, a sparrow.
Course he is, Ivy sniffed. Wouldn't be up here otherwise.
I gave Uncle Abner and his scavenger a wide berth. When I was close enough, Twyla jumped up and threw her arms around me.
Can't say I'm happy you're here, but I am happy to see you.
I hugged her back. Yeah, well, I'm not all that happy to be here either. Uncle Abner took a swig of whiskey.
Then why'd you go and jump off that fool tower?
I didn't know what to say, but Sulla answered before I had to think of anything.
You know the answer to that, Abner, about as well as you know your own name. Now stop giving the boy a hard time.
The crow flapped its wings again.
Somebody should, Uncle Abner said.
Sulla turned and gave Uncle Abner the look. I wondered if that was where Amma had learned it.
Unless you were strong enough to stop the wheel of fate yourself, you know the boy didn't have a choice.
Delilah brought a wicker chair over for me.
Now, you come on and sit down here with us.
Sulla was still flipping cards, but these were ordinary playing cards. Can you read those two? It wouldn't have surprised me. She laughed, and the sparrow chirped.
No, we're just playing gin.
Sulla slapped down her cards.
Speaking of that, gin.
Delilah pouted.
You always win.
Well, I've won again, Sulla said. So, why don't you sit down here, Ethan, and tell us what brings you round our way?
I'm not sure how much you know. She lifted her eyebrows. Okay, so you probably already know that I went to see Obadiah's Trueblood, this old... She nodded. And if he's telling the truth, there's a way I can get back home. I was stumbling over my words. I mean, to the home where I was alive. I have to get my page from the Casta Chronicles, she finished for me.
I know all that. So why don't you go on and say what you need from us?
I was sure she knew, but she wanted me to ask anyway. It was only proper. I need a stone. I thought about the best way to describe it. This will probably sound strange, but I saw you wearing it once. In kind of a dream, it's shiny and black.
This one?
Sulla held out her palm. There it was, the black stone I saw in my vision. I nodded, relieved.
Darn right you do.
She pressed the rock into my hand, closing my fingers around it. It pulsed with a kind of strange warmth.
that seemed to come from inside. Delilah looked at me.
You know what that is?
I nodded. Obadiah said it's called a river's eye, and I need two of them to get across the river.
Then I reckon you're one short,
Uncle Abner said. He hadn't moved from the railing. He was busy packing his pipe with dry leaf tobacco.
Oh, there's another one, Sulla smiled knowingly. Don't you know?
I shook my head. Twyla reached over and took my hand. A smile spread across her face, her long braids slipping over her shoulder as she nodded.
A cadeau, a gift. I remember when I gave it to Lena,
she said in her heavy French Creole accent.
River's Eye is a powerful stone, brings luck and a safe journey.
As she spoke, I saw the charm from Lena's necklace, the smooth black rock she always wore hanging from the chain. Of course, Lena had the second stone I needed.
You know how to get to the river and get on your way?
Twyla asked, dropping my hand. I pulled Aunt Prue's map out of my back pocket.
I have a map. My aunt gave it to me. Maps are good, Sulla said, looking it over. But birds are better.
She made a clicking noise with her tongue, and the sparrow fluttered onto her shoulder.
A map can lead you astray if you don't read it right. A bird always knows the way.
I wouldn't want to take your bird. She had already given me the stone. It felt like I was taking too much. Plus, birds made me nervous. They were like old ladies, but with sharper beaks. Uncle Abner took a long puff of his pipe and walked toward us. Even though he wasn't looming over me from the sky, he was still taller than me. He had a slight limp, and I couldn't help but wonder what caused it. He hooked his finger around one of the suspenders attached to his loose brown pants.
Then take mine.
Excuse me, sir?
My bird.
He cocked his shoulder, and the huge crow's feathers ruffled.
If you don't want to take Sulla's bird, which I understand since it's not much bigger than a field mouse, then take mine.
I was scared to stand next to that vulture-sized crow. I definitely didn't want to take it anywhere with me. But I had to be careful because he was offering me something he valued, and I didn't want to insult him. I really didn't want to insult him.
I appreciate it, sir, but I don't want to take your bird either. It seems,
the crow squawked loudly, really attached to you. The old man waved off my concern.
Nonsense! Exu is smart. Named for the god of the crossroads. He watches the doors between worlds and knows the way. Don't you, boy?
The bird sat proudly on the man's shoulder as if he knew Uncle Abner was singing his praises. Delilah walked over and held out her arm. Exu flapped his wings once, dropping down to land on her.
The crow is also the only bird that can cross between the worlds, the veils between life and death, and places far worse. That old heap of feathers is a powerful ally, and a better teacher, Ethan.
Are you saying he can cross over to the mortal realm? Was that really possible? Uncle Abner blew the thick pipe smoke in my face as he spoke.
Course he can! There and back again. Only place that bird can't go is underwater. And that's only 'cause I never taught him to swim.
So he can show me the way to the river.
He could show you a lot more than that, if you pay attention.
Uncle Abner nodded at the bird, and it took off into the sky, circling above our heads.
He behaves best if you give a gift every now and again, just like the god I named him after.
I had no idea what kinds of gifts to offer a crow, a voodoo god, or a crow named after one. I got the feeling regular bird seed wasn't going to cut it. But I didn't have to worry because Uncle Abner made sure I knew.
Take some of this.
He poured whiskey into a dented flask and handed me a small tin. It was the same one he had opened to fill his pipe. Your bird drinks whiskey and eats tobacco? The old man frowned.
Just be glad he doesn't like eating scrawny boars that don't know their way around the other world.
Yes, sir, I nodded.
Now you get out of here and take my bird and that stone.
Uncle Abner shooed me away.
I won't get any of Amaree's pie with you hanging around here.
Yes, sir. I put the tobacco tin and the flask in my pocket with the map. And thank you. I started down the stairs and stepped off the porch. I turned back to take one last look at the greats, gathered around a card table, sewing and fussing, scowling and drinking whiskey, depending on which one of them you were talking about. I wanted to remember them this way, like regular people who were great for reasons that had nothing to do with seeing the future or scaring the hell out of dark casters. They reminded me of Amma,